Good morning. I'm Mike Niehaus. This is my second session here this week, talking about what's new in MDT 2012. For those of you who aren't familiar with MDT 2012, it is a new release that's really designed to target that new System Center 2012 wave. So the main focus that we have for this release is adding support for Configuration Manager 2012 and its new OS deployment capabilities. We'll touch on that a little bit in this session, but I've got another session this afternoon where we'll go much deeper into what's new in Config Manager 2012. Here we just want to focus on what's been added in MDT to actually support that. But we don't want to come out with a new release of MDT just with Config Manager 2012 support. We want to take the opportunity to add some other things along the line. So we'll also add capabilities for Light Touch and existing Config Manager 2007 customers. So we'll take a look at what those are to see the types of features that we're adding in this release. For us, this is kind of a transitional release that we have MDT 2010 Update 1 out. It supports all the way up through Windows 7. There's another version of Windows that we keep hearing rumors about that's coming out farther down the line. This release is going to be targeting that in-between space where, okay, we're going to ship this shortly after the Config Manager 2012 RTM. We released a first beta back a few months ago, which you can download from connect.microsoft.com today. What we'll be looking at today is actually more of the Beta 2 features. So I'll be showing you some things if you go out to Connect and download it and try it out and wonder why they're not there. Well, these are Beta 2 things, and Beta 2 is supposed to be out in the October timeframe. So be on the lookout for that. That will correspond roughly to the Config Manager 2012 release candidate timeframe. And then we'll have our final release of MDT 2012 shortly after the Config Manager RTM. So, okay, in Beta 1 of MDT 2012, we added support for Config Manager 2012, which means that we need to support their new console, which they've completely rewritten in Config Manager 2012, so we had to get everything to work inside of there. But then we also want to leverage some of the new features that they put into 2012, like a new application model and the new pre-execution hook or pre-start commands that you can put into your boot images to automatically select a task sequence. So we've done the necessary plumbing work to do that. Let me just jump over to that and let's take a look at what that looks like. How many of you have been to a Config Manager 2012 session this week? A good number of you. I'm sure James has done a few of them here this week. The console itself has been rewritten, and it's fairly nice overall. We have our new application set up here. From an OS deployment perspective, though, everything is here under operating systems, and the integration that MDT provides is here as well. So under task sequences, we have a create MDT task sequence action wizard built into the Config Manager 2012 console. When we run that, it'll walk us through a wizard, and that wizard creates all the necessary Config Manager packages for us. And it's kind of the same wizard that we had before. No big differences from what you had seen in the past. We have done a few tweaks to this, so if you're doing server deployments and you're using the standard install.wim, which has 8 different images in it, we've added the abilities to select an image from that so that you don't always get the first image selected by default. That also will help out in any situations where you might have built a WIM that contains both an x86 and an x64 operating system image, so we can now build the right answer files depending on which one you choose. So we put in some work for those, but otherwise it's mostly unchanged. The wizard's actually hung here, so I lost my network connection momentarily. We'll see if that comes back on its own. Let me see if I can help it along here a little bit. never fails when you want to actually show something, the network will go away, but it'll be back in a couple of minutes, so we'll continue on when that recovers. While we added support for Config Manager 2012, we wanted to make sure that we also continued to support the Config Manager 2007 customers, because we know people aren't going to switch over from Config Manager 2007 to 2012 overnight. So MDT 2012 will still support both. We've then done a variety of additional features for primarily around light touch. So we've added deploy to VHD capabilities. I'm not sure how many of you have ever tried to do that, but the process is described in the Windows Automated Installation Kit, that here's how you need to go about doing a VHD deployment of Windows, which typically involves creating an empty VHD, then applying the image into it, and then doing BCD manipulations and getting all of that to work as expected. So there is plenty of documentation that explains how to do that, but there was no real automation around it. You had to follow the process that went through, which wasn't that hard, but still most people wouldn't go through the trouble of doing that. So we've tried to make that much easier in MDT 2012 just by providing a task sequence template that does all the steps for you. You can just choose that task sequence template, and when you do that deployment, it'll make sure that you get the necessary configuration in place. Just trying to recover some network information here, so hang on for just a second. Never fails. The networking will go down when you least expect it. So while that's working, some of the other things that we've added support for Windows Thin PC and Windows POS Ready 7. How many of you know what Windows Thin PC is? How many of you have never even heard of it? Well, that's a good sign. Apparently, Microsoft's marketing doesn't do a very good job. Windows Thin PC is an operating system that's available to software assurance customers that is designed to run on lesser hardware to act as a thin client to a VDI or terminal server farm. So think of it as a stripped-down version of Windows 7 with all the components removed except for a browser and a terminal services client. The licensing restrictions are also in place then to say this can only be used to run those types of applications. So you can put a Citrix client on it, Zen desktop or something like that, but you can't use it to run any applications locally. It's designed to only run those from the cloud. So it's useful in limited situations, but we didn't have support for deploying that in MDT. It was just released like within the last, I'd say, six to eight weeks. So it hasn't been around that long. There was a previous version of it that you may have heard of called Windows Fundamentals for Legacy PCs, which was based around Windows XP. This is the replacement. So as they replaced Windows Fundamentals for Legacy PC with Windows Thin PC, they moved from an XP core to a Windows 7 core. So we've added support for that. POS Ready 7 is a little more special purpose. It's for point-of-sale machines, cash registers, self-checkout machines, those types of devices that you would see in retail stores that are running Windows behind the scenes, but then it has all the support for cash registers and receipt printers and credit card scanners and those types of things. So we can deploy that as well. Both of those are available to volume licensed customers, to enterprises, so that's why we've added support for them into MDT 2012. We've also added support for cross-platform deployment. So if you're booted into an x86 boot image using light touch, before you would only see x86 task sequences. You wouldn't see x64 task sequences. So we fixed that, Now, when you boot into x86, you'll be able to see both x86 and x64 task sequences. Now, the opposite isn't true. So if you boot into x64, you won't see x86 task sequences because Windows doesn't support that. I hate to see what kind of questions Johan has, but go ahead. What question? So the question was, do you need to import the 64-bit boot image in order to have the cross-platform support? Not really. I mean, it's not going to be used, but you have the flexibility if you have it there in order to do a 64-bit deployment as well as an x86 deployment. But in that situation where we're doing a cross-platform deployment, we'll use the x86 boot image, we'll use the install.wim from the x64 files, but the rest of the x64 install files aren't used at all. There is some tweaks that need to be done at the same time, because if you were to look at the answer file that goes along with an x64 task sequence, all of the settings are for x64. Sounds reasonable, you're deploying an x64 OS. But there's a Windows PE phase of this process, and the Windows PE phase is running as x86. So your answer file really needs x86 settings for Windows PE and x64 settings for the operating system. Well, that sounded like a bit too much trouble to ask people to go through and do that. So we will do the necessary translations on the answer files while we're doing the deployment, to change the x64 Windows PE settings over to x86 so that everything just works for you. So we've automated that part. Now, there are some limitations to this cross-platform support, and we're finding more and more of them every day. For the few of you who might be deploying Windows Vista or Windows Server 2008 still, cross-platform installation of the operating system doesn't work with Windows PE 3.0. Well, we're not going to back up and use Windows PE 2.0 just so that we can do a cross-platform install of Windows Vista or Server 2008. So we're still evaluating options there. We may move to an ImageX-based installation instead of a setup-based one. There are also limitations around Windows Server 2003 or Windows XP 64-bit. If you try to do an unattended install of those, obviously you can't do a cross-platform unattended install. In Beta 1, we'll let you try, and it'll fail miserably. But for Beta 2, we'll block that to prevent you from doing things that just won't work. We also put a lot of work into the Light Touch wizards to improve the overall look and feel of those, having them adopt more of a System Center UI look and feel. We've added additional progress displays all throughout the process wherever we could. So if we're performing a long operation, we should be able to tell you what we're doing. Like we're installing updates, we're copying drivers, we're installing this particular application. Anything that takes a while, we want to be able to show you what's up. That also goes for user state migration, image capture. Every place we've been able to find a long-running process, we've added some type of progress display to it. We've made a variety of changes kind of to the plumbing of partitioning and user state migration. So while you may not notice those externally, we've tried to put a lot of work into those to make it so that a lot of kind of fringe scenarios that may have caused issues in the past will just work. We also changed the partitioning structures that we put in place by default on bare metal deployments to use the recommended Windows AIK settings. With MDT 2010, we would put the OS first and then a small BitLocker boot partition second. With MDT 2012, we flipped that around to put the boot partition first and then the operating system partition after it, which is what's recommended there. We also added support for UEFI, which kind of ties into that partitioning as well. In the case of UEFI, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's a replacement for the standard BIOS that you have on your PCs today. A lot of the laptops that you have in the room here are actually using UEFI, but they emulate the legacy BIOS. Well, you can do a native UEFI deployment with MDT 2012. If you do that, that also ties into that partitioning, because now we need to put in a recommended UEFI partition structure, which is three partitions. You need a EFI partition, an MSR partition, and then the operating system partition. So we'll create that structure as recommended as well. We also added, well, actually we didn't, we support 4K disk drives. That's not really something that MDT is doing. That's something that Windows PE 3.1 takes care of and Windows 7 SP1 takes care of. But with the 4K disks, we're just going through and certifying and testing and making sure that MDT, when used with Windows PE 3.1, always gets partitions aligned properly when you're using 4K disks. If you've never heard about 4K disks, it's a new drive geometry. Instead of using 512 byte sectors, they've moved to 4K sectors. The 4K sectors require that everything be aligned on 4K boundaries. Because the OS doesn't support native 4K sector sizes, the disks provide 512 byte emulation. So, okay, everything just works, but if you don't have everything aligned on a 4K boundary, your performance suffers. Windows overall could have a 20 to 30% performance penalty if the partitions aren't aligned properly. The same goes for large data files inside of those partitions, especially on servers. If you were to create a VHD file that wasn't aligned properly, your Hyper-V VM performance could suffer because of that alignment. So we just need to make sure that every time that we're doing this, that the partitions are aligned properly, that the files that we're creating are aligned properly. But most of that's a function of Windows PE and the operating system. The only other oddity of 4K disks is they're not supported with Windows XP. Microsoft doesn't provide any support for Windows XP for those, because Windows XP is in its extended support days at this point. So there's no plans to come out with any hot fixes to make Windows XP aware of those. You may also see some issues if you're using MDT 2010 or 2012 to deploy Windows XP to a 4K disk. You may see it blue screen. Actually, it goes back to Johann's Uber bug scenario, where there are differences between the Windows PE 2.x, 3.x partitioning and what XP expects, which causes the XP mini setup process to completely destroy the partition table. Blue screen blows up. So there was a workaround of forcing DiskPart to put the necessary backward compatibility registry keys into Windows PE so that it creates the partitions in the right place. Great, until 4K disks come along, because the 4K disk logic overrides the override and says, no, I'm not going to listen to that because that would result in an improperly aligned partition. It's not on a 4K boundary. So XP then boots up, goes through mini setup, and boom, it blows up. Fortunately, there's a simple fix for that. You can go into the sysprep.inf, find the line that says extend OEM partition equals 1, and remove it. In that case, then the Uber bug doesn't actually cause a blue screen, and everything goes through okay. So at least there's a fairly easy workaround for that. But still, XP is not supported on 4K drives. There are KB articles that explain all those limitations. And of course, while we had the opportunity, we went through and did a variety of bug fixes, supportability enhancements, just lots of little things that add up overall. So let me switch back over to my now recovered demo machine. And let's pick up where we left off. Let's say that we're going to do a server. So let's just say R2. I can put it in a work group. I don't need to create a boot image. Well, actually, let me create a boot image. Except I can't type. Packages. All right, what didn't it like? Invalid path. It's not cap, it's CAS. Central admin site for config manager. So this is the new capabilities that we added in to support the pre-execution hook or the pre-start hook capabilities that are in the new boot image. Before, if we wanted to hook anything into the boot image, we ended up burying that inside of the WIM while we were creating the boot image. But now it's actually a property on the boot image object that you create in Config Manager, which is kind of nice because you can go in and make changes to that source folder that you add in. after you would check the box and then browse to the particular source folder that contained your files. But after you've updated that folder, you can then just tell Config Manager to update the distribution points, and it will take the contents of that folder, merge it back into the WIM file, and then distribute it out to the DP. So we wanted to take advantage of that. We also added a checkbox to enable command support and checked it by default. I'm not sure how many of you do that as a routine step in your process, but we find it useful to be able to debug the process by hitting F8 anytime you're booted into Config Manager. So we added that. Let me uncheck that because I don't want to specify a folder right now. Let me get to the operating system side. MDT toolkit files. On the OS, if we specify an existing or create a new OS install package, I can choose the Server 2008 R2 one. And this is the point then that we can choose which image that we want to actually install, and it'll create the right answer files based on that choice. So nothing real huge in there. We just made some little tweaks. We have the same basic capabilities hooked into the boot images node, where we can create a boot image using MDT. And then we've also done some tweaks to the task sequences themselves. So let me edit one of these. Where first we've added some additional partitioning steps. These are actually new in beta 2, where we wanted to make sure that regardless of the operating system that you're deploying, create the necessary partition structure. So if you're deploying XP, create one big partition. If you're deploying Windows Vista, create a 2 gig boot partition and then the rest for the OS. If you're deploying Windows 7, create a smaller boot partition. I think we're at 500 meg right now so that we have enough room for WinRE. And then create the rest for the full operating system. So we put in steps for that. We've also put in support for the new application model. So we've got this new group in there. And what they've provided is kind of like the install software step was before. You could specify a list of software that needs to be installed as part of the task sequence. And that list is something that MDT knew how to build up, and it would build like packages 001, 002, 003 with the list of package and program IDs that needed to be installed during the task sequence. With CM12, they've changed that to applications, so they've added a new install application step, but now it uses a 2-digit suffix instead of a 3-digit suffix on that. So, okay, MDT goes through and it builds a list of apps that need to be installed, where you specify the name of the app, not the IDs or any other codes like you did before. But we build that 3-digit list. We didn't really want to change the MDT logic to build 2-digit lists. We couldn't convince the Config Manager guys that you really should be consistent and use a 3-digit list here as well. So, okay, we added an additional step into the task sequence that just says, there's going to be a list called applications that contains 3 digits. I want you to coalesce it into another list called coalesced apps, but only use 2 digits for doing that. So we just translate it on the fly and then feed it into the next step just to simplify things. So we've got that in there, which is convenient. You can install apps during the task sequence. We've also added support for defining the primary user of the machine using user device affinity. By setting the task sequence variables, so that's added in there. There are also a few other tweaks that are in there, but the only other real addition is we've added a new run PowerShell script action. So you can just add a step into your task sequence and then specify the PowerShell script and optionally the package that that's contained in to run PowerShell during the task sequence. We'll look at that a little bit more as we go through just to see what does that integration look like, but that's kind of the quick overview of the Config Manager side of the world. Now let's switch to Light Touch for a little bit. First off, let's look at the new wizards. So this is kind of the welcome screen that you would see when you first get into MDT. We've added a new cloudy background so that we can say that MDT now is cloud aware. Okay. But We've also integrated in, that you can see from here, the Diagnostic and Recovery Toolkit. How many of you have used DART before? It's a fairly useful set of tools, but it was never really integrated into MDT, so you had to go through and do some extra work to add it to your boot images to make those tools available to you. So here with it integrated in, I can just, with a single click, say, show me the DART tools, where it includes things like a registry editor, a file explorer, all kinds of useful stuff inside of Windows PE that you can use to help diagnose any issues that you might have during your deployment. Now, the other thing that we did to integrate DART is when you click on the first link to run the deployment wizard, we will start up the DART remote control agent. So they've provided this software-based RDP-like remote control, which you can see running down here, that you can then connect to from an administrator's workstation. So fairly nice that I can get to this Windows PE machine without even doing, without physically going to it. And I know Johan showed this in a session earlier, but one of the challenges that we wanted to overcome was, in order to make that connection, you need to know the ticket number, the IP address, and the port. So we wanted to make sure that we could automate that, that we could gather that information up on the client side, provide it back to Deployment Workbench so that you could easily initiate that remote control. So let me get this deployment started, and then we can look at that and another new feature at the same time. So we can see here that we've got x86 and x64 task sequences. We've got task sequences to install PosReady and Windows Thin PC. For right now, I'll just do a simple Windows 7 x86 task sequence. It can join a domain. So we've tried to do a little bit of combining of task sequence or of wizard panes. We've added some graphics here and there. We've tried to make them a little prettier. I could choose what apps I want to install, just like before. We still have BitLocker options. So at this point, I'll go ahead and start that task sequence. And then let me minimize that one. And let me go back over to the server. And you can see another new node in the deployment chair called monitoring. This is actually a beta 2 feature that we haven't really talked about yet, but let me double click on the machine that I just started, and I can actually see where it's at in the process. Even more than that, I can click on the button here to start DART remote control, and it will connect to that machine and show me the running task sequence. So I can see now that it's just getting into setup. So from my admin machine, fairly easy to interact with that, and the performance is actually pretty good. You might not be able to tell that from looking at this because I'm like three levels deep in terminal server sessions, but the fact that you can use three level deep of terminal server sessions is really pretty impressive. So we've got that integration. We also are aware of the fact that these machines may be VMs. And as a result, we can run the Hyper-V VM Connect app and connect to that directly. Now, I can't actually demo that in my environment because my Hyper-V host and my VMs that are running inside of it can't talk to each other. They're on separate networks. But if I click this, it would run VM Connect and try to connect to the virtual machine host and the VM name that we detected from the integration components on the client machine that was being deployed. We could also do remote desktop. We know the name of the host that we're deploying, but the only limitation there is it needs to be in the old OS or in the new OS because RDP won't be available in Windows PE. So, okay, you can remote control all throughout the process. You just might be doing it in different ways depending on where it's at. If it's a virtual machine, you can always use VM Connect as long as you can physically get to the host. In this case, I can't get to my host. Or you can use RDP, or you can use DART. So we're just trying to simplify that. But this monitoring piece really is just so that from your console, you can watch what deployments are going on in your light touch environment. So you've started a task sequence, you can see what's going on. You can just bring it up and watch it, and it'll refresh itself automatically every 10 seconds, or we can just keep on clicking the refresh button. Now, the only challenge with that is it gets to a step like this one, install operating system, and that's where the bulk of the time is. So you'll see it sit at this point for a very long time, but after it gets past that point, you'll see the steps begin to progress, and you can follow along from that point. So if you've got a lot of deployment technicians out in the field and you just want to see what's currently going on in your environment, are there any active deployments, you can set that up. It is an optional piece. In order to enable that, we would need to go to the deployment chair, go into properties, and there's a new monitoring tab, and we just need to check the box. That will set up a service running on whatever computer you specify, and it will listen on a couple of different ports in order to receive data from the clients, which is where the event port comes in, and it can send data out to any of your workbenches, so you don't have to be running workbench on that particular machine. It could be running anywhere. It's a question.
Is there any, do you have any plans of adding the information that the current step has been running for the following amount of time? So instead of saying, this is the step that runs, saying this is the step that runs, and it has been running for 6 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, so the question was, are we planning to add anything to show progress within a step? So if you're running a very long step, can we be able to tell what percent complete that one might be? And we've talked about it. At this point, we haven't done that, but it's not out of the realm of possibilities. The main concern was how frequently we wanted to check in with the server and how that would affect overall scalability of this if you had, say, worst case, 10,000 machines running at one time, each one of them touching in. So that's the main concern why we wouldn't want to do it. We want to make sure that we don't put too much of a load on the server as all these clients check in. But there's certainly the technology to do that built in. We just haven't built anything to leverage that. So at this point, my guess is we won't do that for 2012, but it's something that we may do for the soon-to-follow release after that. So I can enable that fairly easily. It sets up a service. It doesn't require IIS. It doesn't require SQL. It's very easy to set up. Just check the box and go. Once that's done, it will add an entry into custom settings.ini that tells the clients, please talk to the machine that I configured on port 9800. And it will. The clients will then provide those status updates at least at the beginning and end of every step. Now, some of the steps do actually send heartbeats every so often, and those heartbeats would be picked up by the server as well. But the heartbeats don't change the progress. It would just change the last contact time, which doesn't really tell you how far along it is, just tells you that it's still alive. Okay, so we've got the monitoring piece hooked in. We looked at the Dart integration. We looked a little bit at the wizard. Let's look at some other things. So let me go over to a client that I've already deployed. Yeah, this one. I mentioned before that we could create a deploy to VHD partition. Actually, let me look at that task sequence that I've created before, just to show you what's different about it. So if I go to task sequences, I have one to deploy Windows 7 x86 to a VHD. This includes a few new steps to first create, to format and partition the physical disk, then to create a VHD on it where you can specify where to put it or whether we should just pick a place, whether you want to use a differencing disk or not. How much of the physical disk size do you want to use, either absolute or percentage? Do you want it to be dynamic or fixed? So all kinds of options there. But then after we've created that VHD, we need to format it and partition it, because that's where the OS is going to go, and then copy some scripts into it to make sure that the process continues after we try to boot into it. But at that point, really, it becomes a standard operating system deployment where we can just run our normal install OS step, targeting the disk that we formatted previously in that format and partition VHD step. So behind the scenes, the scripts are taking care of all the details to make sure that that works, but the end result is a machine that has a partition structure that looks like this. So I have my 500 meg Windows 7 boot partition. I have a D drive that's 126 gig. If we look at that D drive, it contains one folder called VHD, and inside of that is a randomly named file that the operating system was installed into, which is now grown, because it's a fixed VHD, to 100 gig. So the question was, is there any way to dynamically change the size of a VHD so that you could add another volume to it or potentially extend an existing volume?
Not the VHD, just the disk. So you've got your system partition. So you've got your boot partition, you've got your OS partition.
Right.
In our sequence, you might spec that and blow it out to take the full extent of the disk. Or you might want to say that I only want to create a 40 gig and use the balance for another drive.
Yeah, you can certainly do something like that. You could go in and modify the default format and partition disk steps to specify whatever structure you want using either absolute sizes or percentage of the remaining disk. It's just the default task sequence that we have in place specifies we want one partition at 100%. We then have logic in there that says, oh, well, I know you said one partition at 100%, but we want a boot partition too, so we're going to shrink that by a little bit and put the boot partition first, then create what you specified. Now, if you wanted to create two partitions, three partitions, you could say, I want to create one partition that's 40 gig and then a second partition that's 100%. So if you had a 120 gig disk, you'd end up with 140, 180, and you'd go from there. Can you do that dynamically? Yeah, so there's a little bit bigger challenge. The format and partition disk step is actually set up to read its information from task sequence variables. So you could certainly put in rules into custom settings to change that. We have talked about creating a wizard pane inside of the deployment wizard so that you could do that graphically. We've been prototyping that, but we haven't yet figured out, first, can we make it friendly enough? And second, how many people would actually use it? So we're still on the fence with that one to see whether we'll provide a wizard pane to do that. But that would be kind of the goal, that you could say, yes, I know I want to repartition, reformat the disk. Tell me how you want to do it, and then we'll make it so. So it's being looked at, but not at this point. So in this case, we've got that disk. It's got the VHD on it. The VHD shows up as a C drive, even though it's a separate disk. So apart from the normal limitations of boot from VHD, you really can't tell that you're running from a VHD. It works just like running from a normal hard disk. If you were to do this on desktop machines, probably not a big deal. You're not going to notice that you're running on a VHD. If you're doing it on laptops, you're going to start to notice things like you can't put it to sleep, you can't enable BitLocker. So there are some limitations that would prevent you from doing this on a broad scale, but it does have some good scenarios where you can use these VHDs. So we've got that set up, but really what I wanted to show at this point was integration of PowerShell. So this is the new initialization process. We wanted to make sure that we knew that we could show you what was going on when you first ran the LightTouch script. But in this case, I have a task sequence called PowerShell test. So let me jump over to my server and show you what that looks like. It's nothing special. It's really just a test to show the integration of PowerShell. I have a task sequence with exactly one step that says to run a script called test.ps1. And test.ps1 is kind of a hello world script, but then with a little extra stuff added into it. So it writes some output, it imports a server manager module so it can see what modules are installed, what features are available in PowerShell. It can see what PowerShell drives are defined. It can do a directory of all the task sequence and environment variables so that you can see what variables have been defined in your task sequence. And it also knows about those three-digit lists, so it can show you any of those as arrays rather than just as individual variables. So we wanted to make sure that when you ran a PowerShell script inside of a task sequence, it has good integration with the environment that it's running in, and also that any of the output generated ends up in the normal log file. So even though that write host says hello world, that ends up in the bdd.log just like any other MDT script would. We also wanted to make sure that if you put together a PowerShell script that reported progress, that you could see the progress in the task sequence progress dialog. So in this case, it's not a very sophisticated script. It's just going to go through and count from 1 to 100 and update the progress to say percent complete to the current number, and then sleep for a second. So we'll see it count for 100 seconds and see what that looks like inside of the task sequence. So not what I would consider a useful PowerShell script for anything other than demo purposes, but hey, that's why we're here, to do a demo. So if we go back over there, we can choose that task sequence. Because it only has the one step, we go immediately to the final screen and we can say begin. And at that point, we can see it displaying the progress and counting through. But now we can also take a look at the bdd.log. Let me see that in a larger font. Zoom, it disappeared on me when I lost my network connection. Otherwise, I'd zoom in on this. But 26 point should work. We scroll down toward the bottom. We can see the output from the various commands that we executed. So like in this case, we can see this is the output from the directory of TSENV colon. So we can see that there's a variable called architecture that was set to x86. We got the asset tag, capable architectures, the deploy root value, some encrypted admin password variables, the HAL name. So all of the typical stuff that MDT gathers and puts into the task sequence environment, we just dumped into the log using one PowerShell command, which is kind of nice. Fairly easy to do that. But you can write your own PowerShell scripts that can interact with the environment in the same way by doing something like $TSENV colon variable name equals whatever new value I want to assign. So we're trying to make that extremely easy. And at the same time, give you a mechanism so that you could actually test these and work on developing these outside of the task sequence. That's really one of the typical headaches with doing this, that if the only way you have to test a PowerShell script is to run a task sequence and you have to deploy an OS, it means your test cycle takes an hour because you need to deploy an OS each time. We wanted to make that simpler. So we'll provide some instructions on how to do that as well. One of the other things that we've done is we've added a new flag that you can set, a new task sequence variable to say hide the shell. So you can say hide shell equals yes. And when you do a light touch deployment then, instead of the mechanism that we used before to run the task sequence in the new operating system, which was log into the machine, create a startup group item, wait for the shell to fully load, and then continue on with the task sequence in the new OS. We've changed it so that you could say, basically, do this via run once. So you could specify this, and as a result, the task sequence continues to run before you can ever see the shell. So that's how you end up with a screen that looks like this, that we've automatically logged into Windows 7. We have a run once item that's waiting for you to click on finish, and then as soon as you click on finish, then the next action will happen. Now, in this case, my next action is just to continue on and show the desktop. But you could say finish action equals log off, or finish action equals reboot, or set other task sequence variables to say as soon as I click that finish button, yeah, get me out of this automatically logged on administrator session and to the point where a user could log on and continue from that point. So it's really trying to take that a little bit of that attack surface away, not really attack surface, but tinker surface away, so that people don't try to interfere quite so much with the process while it's running, because it's much harder to get to the shell and interact with this machine while it's running in this particular state.
Can you still do multiple
You can still do multiple reboots, so it sets up a run once, but then each time before it reboots, it creates a new run once entry, so it's constantly putting itself back as a run once entry. The only real limitation that you would run into is some installers might not like running at this point because the full shell's not really there. Enough of it is that most things run fine, which is why we've made this optional and not the default. And then the second would be, it's not really secure because I could always hit Control-Alt-Delete on this screen, bring up Task Manager, File Run, cmd.exe, and do whatever I wanted. It's just, it requires a little more determination to interact with this rather than accidentally interacting with it. So if I click Finish at this point, the whole process finishes. We then continue to log on, and we have our normal desktop. So it's a new option. You can turn it on or not. It was actually a mandatory feature from our Microsoft IT group, so we added that in so that they could provide that internally for their Windows 7 deployments. So, what operating system do you think this is? Windows 7? Yeah, kind of. Windows 7 Thin PC. So this is the OS that I was talking about before. You really can't tell it apart from the normal Windows 7, except that there's less stuff in the start menu. So as I mentioned before, you have Internet Explorer, you have the remote desktop client, but there's really not much else present. A few accessories, so I think there's probably a calculator in here. But beyond that, it's designed as a thin client. If we were to look at this on the computer, on the disk, it says 123 gig out of 126 gig, so that means this operating system is using 3 gig of disk space. And if we were to look at it from a memory footprint perspective, it's probably using less memory than a typical install as well. So I've got 1 gig of RAM allocated, but it's actually only using a fraction of that. It's only using about a third of that memory. So it's really designed for that lesser capable machine that you just want to reuse it as a thin client. So definitely try it out. If you have software assurance, it's free, so you can go out to the licensing.microsoft.com website, download the ISO, which is also nice and small because it's a stripped-down image, and just drop it in and try it out. Now, even though we added support for this in MDT 2012, you can make it work in 2010 Update 1. There was exactly one thing we had to change to make this work with MDT 2012. We had to remove an entry from the unattend file that says upgrade equals no. Windows Thin PC isn't an upgradable OS. It isn't an OS you can upgrade to, so that answer file setting isn't valid. So we had to add logic into MDT 2012 to strip that out. Well, if you wanted to do this with MDT 2010, you just do the same thing. Go into the answer file that we put in there, find the upgrade data section, and remove it because it's not valid for Windows Thin PC. Okay. One of the big debates that we had, I know this mentions TechReady, which is our internal conference, but we had the same debate at the Microsoft Management Summit in Vegas and also with several of the MVPs back at the MVP Summit that we had, as to whether MDT 2012 should continue to support Windows XP and Windows Server 2003. I mean, the support timelines for those are getting to the point where you're rapidly approaching complete end of life. I mean, they're already in extended support, and they will be completely unsupported in the case of XP in 2014. So we would have really liked to drop it, but everybody complains. So, okay, they win. We'll put it back in. We'll continue to support XP and Server 2003 in this release and quite possibly in the next one as well. Primarily for one real scenario. We don't really want to encourage you to continue deploying an operating system that's almost completely to its end of life. But we do want you to be able to continue to maintain your current environment that has XP in it and do break-fix deployments of XP while you're working on your Windows 7 deployment projects. So we put it back in for that purpose, to make it easier for you to do that coexistence between your existing XP machines and the Windows 7 images that you're deploying. So we added that back in. Just to make it clear, we aren't dropping support for Config Manager 2007 in MDT 2012. So you can use MDT 2012 with either Config Manager 2007 or 2012. But there is one thing that we did remove in regards to Config Manager support. We had some OEM task sequence templates for Config Manager that we took out. When we released those with MDT 2010, there was no Config Manager R3 in existence. We know that there were customers that wanted to be able to do these OEM deployments where you create an image of the hard disk the way you want it, you send it off to the PC manufacturer, and they mass produce it onto all these new machines that you buy so that when you bring it back into your environment and plug it in and turn it on for the first time, it immediately starts deploying from the local hard drive instead of pulling in everything over the network. So it's a great scenario, but Config Manager didn't support it, so we added that in MDT. Config Manager 2007 R3 then came out and added the pre-staged media capabilities that obviated the need for these task sequences, because not only did they add that capability, they made it better. They made it better by enabling you to stage a boot image onto the hard drive as well as the operating system so that you never needed to connect to the network to do this process. In MDT, our task sequence templates needed to pixie boot in order to pull down the boot image to then continue the task sequence from the network. In this case, that wasn't really an option, so it was just easier for us to say, you know what? Config Manager did it right now. So with Config Manager R3, it's much better than it was before, and you should make use of that. So we already looked at the wizards as we were going through. We can skip through that. Let's talk about some known issues in MDT 2012 Beta 1. First of all, for those of you who decided to do this, to install the beta on your production environment for your live deployment share, and then complain that it didn't quite go right, I apologize, but I'm not particularly sorry for you. We put in our release notes, don't do this in production. This is just for lab testing. Use at your own risk. Make sure you have backups. All of these warnings about beta software that people always completely ignore. But there just happened to be a bug in there that caused the MDT 2012 upgrade process to look at your existing MDT 2010 deployment share and think, ooh, that looks like BDD 2007. So as a result, I need to rewrite all of the XML files that are used to define the deployment share. And BDD 2007 didn't understand folders. It had groups, it didn't have folders. So what it ended up doing was it took all of the folders and kept the folders, but it moved all the items back to the root. So if you went through and you created all these folders and neatly arranged everything and then went through the upgrade process, it just completely flattened it. All your data is still there, everything still works fine, but the layout of it has just been everything moved back up to the top level folders. We fixed that. That won't be a problem anymore for Beta 2, but if you do run into that, there are a couple of workarounds documented on the Connect site. One of them is to do some playing with the version.xml before you do the upgrade so that we don't think it's BDD 2007. The other is to put the backed up XML files that we create during the upgrade back into the control folder so that you can restore the original configuration after the upgrade. So it is recoverable, but you might have a little shock if you go through that the first time and say, what happened to all my folders? We made some wizard changes in Beta 1 as well, and as a result, you couldn't effectively configure static IP because we would try to connect to the deployment share before we would ask you if you wanted to configure your static IP settings. As a result, you would get an error if you required static IP to get to the deployment share because, well, we hadn't got to that point yet. So we fixed that around. We made sure that the wizard flow is correct for static IP. We've made a lot of changes in the partitioning logic that we already talked about. And what we tried to do at the same time is make sure that when we're doing an OS deployment, we can always target the new operating system to the same partition that the current operating system is on. It's a reasonable assumption that when you're refreshing an existing machine, the new OS should go to the same partition as the old OS. There are still a few scenarios in beta 1 where we don't make the determination right, and you may see the OS get deployed to the wrong partition. If it picks the wrong partition with enough disk space, then yeah, the process still works, but generally it tends to pick at the wrong partition and it's too small, so then the process fails because the OS won't fit. So we've got that fixed up. While we were fixing that up, we realized that, you know what, the config manager task sequences really have the same issue. If you try to refresh existing computers with config manager, you need to take into account in your task sequence where is the current OS so that when you get to the apply operating system step, you tell it where to put the new one by disk number and partition number. Well, let's say you deployed this machine with MDT LightTouch. In that case, you want to deploy to disk 0 partition 1. Let's say you deployed it with the originally from Windows Vista Media. It created the small boot partition first, the OS second. Well, in that case, you want to deploy to disk 0 partition 2. So you've got all of these different scenarios that may cause you to need to deploy to different partitions based on the current config that's in place. So we're making sure we add logic into our config manager template so that it will just figure out where it needs to go and make the necessary tweaks on the fly to the task sequence so you don't need to put all these conditional apply OS steps into the task sequence. There are also some challenges around user state migration. If you have multiple partitions, it may fail because it puts the state in the wrong place. It's supposed to put the primary user state store for a hard link migration on the same volume as the operating system. Sometimes it puts it on a different volume. That by itself wouldn't be a big challenge. But there are some cases where it puts it on the volume that then gets hidden by Windows 7 because it contains the boot files. And as a result, when you boot into Windows 7, it goes looking for it and says, where'd it go? Because the partition, the volume's hidden, we can't find the state store in order to do the restoration, so the process fails. So we're still doing some work around that. In MDT 2010 Update 1, we had a new feature added called UDI, User-Driven Installation, which was a new task sequence template that would present a wizard that you could use to interact with the person installing the operating system even during a task sequence run by Config Manager. There's a new version of that that will be added in MDT 2012 Beta 2, but the version that's in MDT 2012 Beta 1 is the same as what shipped in MDT 2010 Update 1. There hadn't been any changes to it. So it's not aware of Config Manager 2012. It also has some bugs in it that apparently no one has run across yet. Like, there's a place in the wizard where you can choose the volume that you should deploy to. It gives you a drop down where you could pick C, D, E, F, whatever volume you wanted to deploy to. It completely ignores that value and deploys to C. But you would think that in the year since then, someone would have noticed that and reported a bug, but I guess they didn't, so we're wondering whether that feature is ever actually used. But we will fix that for Beta 2 as we put the new UDI pieces in place. There will be some additional enhancements to UDI for that beta as well. With the new Config Manager console in Config Manager 2012, we still have the ability as part of the MDT wizards to create a new boot image. But this new console isn't MMC-based. And as a result, when you run it, it doesn't prompt for elevation. When you have UAC enabled and you're not logged on as the local or domain administrator account. So as a result, in typical scenarios, the console's not running elevated. So when you try to do things that require elevation, they fail. Well, generating a boot image requires elevation because it has to mount the Windows PE WIM file in order to build the custom WIM that's going to then be imported into Config Manager. So for Beta 2, we need to enhance that process to prompt for elevation at that point. But for Beta 1, you would need to run the console itself elevated in order to get through that boot image generation process. So, okay, for beta 2 then, which is targeting the October timeframe, we're working on that actively right now, we'll have the new UDI components, which will include a brand new UDI wizard designer. Basically, it's being rewritten from ground up. It will have some extensibility to it, so you can add in your own custom wizard panes into the UDI wizard if you want. It will have full support for Config Manager 2012 and the new app model, so you can choose in the application picker, do you want new Config Manager 12 apps or do you want old packages and programs? And we've eliminated the web service that we provided in UDI as well. For those of you who aren't familiar with what that did, it basically allowed you to take the list of packages and programs that were presented in the UDI wizard, and that was just an XML blob, store it in a SQL database, and then be able to take that blob out of the SQL database via a web service and send it to the client. Okay, if you don't use the web service, it just pulls that from the MDT settings package that's in Config Manager. And the reason people wanted the web service was so that they didn't have to refresh that settings package every time they would make changes to that application list. Well, there's a much easier way. Maintain that XML file and put it on a UNC path and tell us where it is. Or if you prefer to use HTTP, take that file, put it on whatever web server you want, and give us the URL to it, and we'll pull it down from that point. I mean, it's really kind of silly to say you must set up a web service, you must install SQL, you must create this SQL database just to store about a 5K blob of XML. So it's a simplification thing. That's why we're getting rid of it. It's going to be much easier to do just by using a UNC or using a web server that you may already have. We're also adding in full Windows recovery environment, Windows RE support. We're still debating some of the scenarios that we want to support there, but at the very least, we want you to be able to boot into a repair image running from your hard drive and perform recovery options, with or without Dart integrated into the process. But in order to do things like startup repair, things like that. We'd like to take it further and enable things like complete PC backup and reinstall the OS from local media, reinstall the OS from a network share. So just staging some of that recovery data, recovery files locally so that if something happens to the machine, it can be recovered more easily. We already talked about the Dart integration. We took a look at that. We also are hoping to add in more support for AppV to integrate really the AppV packages, the OSDs, into Deployment Workbench and treat them just like any other app. Still questionable whether we'll be able to get to that for Beta 2, but that's still our goal. We already looked at the PowerShell support. That'll be provided in LightTouch and in Config Manager. We'll provide examples and show you how to make use of that. We also want to add offline user state migration into the LightTouch task sequences. If you've used UDI with Config Manager, one of the things you can do is pixie boot the machine and say, I want to keep the existing partition structure and migrate all the user data. And it leverages USMT offline to grab all the data from that offline OS, save it, install the new OS, and then put all the data back. So we want to provide that same level of support for LightTouch so that regardless of the scenario you're making use of here, you can recover the data that's currently on the machine. So we'll add some steps into the task sequence for that. So we already looked at Dart. We can skip past that. We also talked about the run once support. Very simple to implement. Just say hide shell equals yes in custom settings. We'll enable that. We're still working on the cleanup logic that really can cause issues anytime you have a task sequence that doesn't complete cleanly. So we have task sequences that will maybe fail because you don't have a network driver, or maybe just hold down the power button until the machine turns off because you see things aren't going right, and then you try to start up a new task sequence, and the files left behind by the old one interfere. And as a result, things go drastically wrong and the whole process fails. We want to make sure that we can detect those dirty environments and clean them up so that you don't run into those types of issues. So hopefully the days of going in and manually deleting the mini NT folder and the underscore SMS task sequence folder are going to go away, that we can take care of that for you. We already looked at the monitoring piece. The monitoring piece itself is just designed as a lightweight way from your console that you can watch the progress of any deployments happening in your environment. One piece that we haven't looked at yet is an image factory. How many of you have read through my blog posting that talks about creating an image factory using System Center Virtual Machine Manager? A few of you, but that probably means I should explain what an image factory is. The basic concept is you've defined these task sequences, and the task sequences are used to spit out a new image. So every so often you run these task sequences, it creates a new image, and then you use that new image to do your actual deployments. Maybe you do that monthly with every patch cycle, maybe you do that quarterly, maybe you do that once a year, it doesn't really matter how frequently you do that. But in order to do that, if you've got multiple task sequences, you have to spin up a machine for running each one of them, start the process, walk away, come back a couple hours later, make sure it all worked okay, collect all the images, and then you can import them into MDT, use them for your deployment task sequences, and go on. So it's kind of a tedious process to go through, especially if you have multiple images, multiple task sequences that you need to worry about. So what we tried to do in the past is we provided a sample set of PowerShell scripts that would create a virtual machine using Virtual Machine Manager, configure MDT to run a particular task sequence in that virtual machine, flip the switch, turn that virtual machine on. Okay, on to the next virtual machine, create a new one, tie the second task sequence to that. Third virtual machine, third task sequence, fourth virtual machine, fourth task sequence. Start them all up, get them running, and in the end, they just automatically sysprep, capture a WIM, write it back to a network share. So it gets it to the point where you have the single button. You push the button, it goes out, it builds all your task sequences, spits out new WIMs, and you use those new WIMs then as your new starting point. So what we wanted to do was try to automate that and integrate it more into Deployment Workbench to simplify that setup. So let me switch back over to my machines here. I'm not convinced I have a connection to that machine here. But I can create one here real quick. We have the technology. So integrating this into MDT, into the workbench, basically just means that we should be able to run a wizard on a deployment share where we can choose the task sequences that we want, choose the virtual machine private cloud that we're going to run all these in, and then the rest is just taken care of for you. Now, as part of that whole private cloud configuration, you may need to specify a little bit of additional data with that, but it's not too many questions. I mean, it's things like pick the cloud name, pick the capability profile within that cloud. So do I want to build these on Hyper-V or ESX or Zen server? It can take care of any of those. Do I want to connect it to this network connection or that network connection because my cloud has multiple networks defined in it? So once you've defined all that, it can then leverage the PowerShell capabilities of Virtual Machine Manager to integrate all that. And of course this is going to be problematic for me, so let's try a little separate approach here. These two machines sit right next to each other, and I can get to one of them and I can't get to the other, it would figure. But I can get to one from the other. And I still can't type. Whoops. I hate when that happens. You click the wrong place and I just terminated my session. Let me get back in again. I was so close. So while it's thinking, maybe it's going to come back. While it's thinking about that, let's talk about one of the other options, and then I can jump back over to this. One of the challenges that you have, especially when you're in a lab environment, is that task sequences, steps in task sequences can fail for whatever reason. And it doesn't really matter what that reason is. It causes the whole deployment to fail. And if it's an early step in the task sequence, not a big deal. It fails and only takes a couple of minutes, and then you try again. If it's a step toward the end, though, you hate to go through a two-hour execution just to find out that, oh, I had a typo in that command line. So what we wanted to provide was a mechanism for really saying, an error occurred in this step. What do you want to do about it? So can we prompt you and ask, do you want to continue anyway? This step failed. Here's the command that was executed. Here's the return code. Here's the output from that step. Do you want to continue anyway? Do you want to fail the task sequence? Maybe you just want to tweak the command and try again. So we'll provide options along those lines to help with that. So we'll add that into beta 2 as well. Let's look back at the image factory. Got my connection again. So this is Virtual Machine Manager 2012. I have a cloud defined. If we look at the properties of the cloud, and you don't specify too much, you specify what hosts it can use for virtual machines, what networks it's connected to, what capability profiles should be used, so does it support ESX, Hyper-V, Xen, etc. So you've got all of those details in there. Then in MDT, I've got multiple task sequences defined, and I can run an image factory wizard where I choose the task sequences that I want to run. Specify the VMM server, which is BDSVR. Make sure we can connect to that. Okay. Then I can choose the clouds that I have access to, which I only have one. The network that I want to connect this to. So I'll put it on the corporate Redmond network. And then, yeah, I want to use Hyper-V because my cloud doesn't actually have any Xen or VMware machines in it. So I can choose that and then say, well, at the end of the process, what do I want to do? Do I want to sysprep and write a WIM back to a network path? So I can put in a UNC there of something like CISFS. I always forget what this path is. MIMDT factory. Oops. Yeah, that's right. Factory captures or some path like that. Or I could choose the option that says, now I'm not trying to create WIMs. I'm trying to create templates in VMM. So instead of sysprepping and capturing a WIM, sysprep it and shut it down. And then through the PowerShell automation, say, take that virtual machine and turn it into a template. So providing that level of automation to build up your template library, build up your images, build up whatever you want there. So at that point, I can click to go, and it will start running the PowerShell scripts to do that. And we can actually see that happening inside of VMM. As it refreshes, it will show the virtual machines as they're being created. So we've still got some work to do on the monitoring of it so that you can actually see what's going on. So tying together the monitoring component and the image factory component to give you a nice clear picture of where your VMs are at. But that's some of the work that we're still working on. So I think that's about it, which is good because we're just about out of time. Oh, a few other things. We're looking to get rid of the components tab. We'd like to add more community content into Deployment Workbench. There's some security fixes that we're looking to put into place, some challenges that we're trying to address there, and potentially some other things. But still, it's not too late to get ideas in for new features to add. We're still taking feedback on that, trying to integrate it into Beta 2 for the MDT 2012 release. We were actually making changes last night based on feedback received by customers yesterday during the day. So we're really talking real-time feedback at this point. So certainly go out to the Connect website. There's a feedback link there. Submit any issues, any questions, any comments that you have, and we'll jump on those before the Beta 2 approaches. That's all I wanted to go through. Hopefully that was a useful overview of all the different things that are in MDT. I do have one more session in the final slot before the lock note this afternoon, where we'll dig into Config Manager 2012 OSD and the changes in Config Manager. Not really looking so much at the MDT side. We looked at that here. It's really going to focus just on Config Manager. Questions? So can you take advantage of monitoring capabilities when you're using SCCM? Not really. The challenge with Config Manager is the Config Manager monitoring is designed around their status message flow. So they've provided capabilities inside of their console to do reports based on the status messages that have come in for machines that are currently being deployed. So you can do things like that, but using the MDT monitoring piece, no, it's separate from that. It would be possible to go into a Config Manager task sequence and define in custom settings that same event service parameter, and it would happily send events over to the client or to the console for MDT, but it wouldn't be able to see the whole picture, because it wouldn't see the status messages coming through Config Manager that say the task sequence has started, this task sequence is completed. So the machines would never complete. You would see them show up and you'd be able to follow them through each of the MDT steps, but they would never show that they were finished. There are ways around that. You could put in status message triggers that would feed those into MDT as well, but then you have timing issues between them, so it's just too messy for us to consider for MDT 2012. It's something we'll look at for the future. There's a question down here.
PowerShell support in Windows PE.
PowerShell support in Windows PE isn't there today. Sorry, can't say any more than that. There's a question up here. So will people be able to run the console from a workstation instead of from the server? They can already do that. So with MDT 2008, 2010, at least 2010, I'm not sure about 2008, we support connecting to remote deployment shares. So you can install it on your workstation and connect to a share on another machine. And even better with the monitoring piece, you could have the deployment share on a machine here, the monitoring on a machine over here, and my console sitting in the middle talking to both of them. So you can break it up some. It doesn't all have to be in one box. In the case of the demo that I was showing, I was running it on three different machines just because of the peculiarities of the Microsoft network. I had to do it to make that work, but yeah, it's fairly easy to do. There's a question up higher. So what versions of SCCM will be supported? All the ones that SCCM supports, which at this point is basically Config Manager SP2 and higher. We really don't care so much about the R2 and R3 releases. They really don't affect us any, but the SP2 base is really required. Yeah, so the question was whether we plan to integrate Ops Manager. And the answer is not directly, because we don't see the typical light touch customer being an Ops Manager customer. However, the monitoring service is being set up to create events on the monitoring machine, which you could easily create a management pack to watch for and feed that into Ops Manager that way. So you could create that MP. I don't think it would be very hard. You just have to look for these particular event IDs, and when they show up, pluck the computer name out of it and, you know, this computer just failed. So it could be done. There's a question down here.
Any chance we'd be able to time bomb boot media?
Any chance we would be able to time bomb boot media? Not with light touch. With Config Manager, you can do that. You can put a certificate on it with an expiration date. But with light touch, no, not really. The challenge that we would have is any type of time bomb that we would try to hook in would be script-based, and we provide the script, so you could look at the script and see what it does and just bypass it. So it wouldn't be terribly effective. I've seen various blog entries from people that have just put in those kind of lightweight deterrents like that. So it can be done, but we don't plan to provide that out of the box. Up higher. As far as the Dart remote control?
Yes, yeah, so to be able to remote to your client, which you're deploying,
Yeah, in the case of Dart, the Dart remote control piece runs in Windows PE. So it would support Windows PE 3.0 and 3.1, which is the same Windows PE that MDT supports. Now, it doesn't run in the full OS. So in the full OS, you're back to using some other type of remote control, either native RDP or, if it's a virtual machine, VM Connect. So that's where you get into that different remote control solutions depending on where it's at in the process. You can't use the Dart remote control through the whole process. If you're using Hyper-V with RemoteFX, would VM Connect work? Yes. Would you get accelerated video? No, I think you'd have to go through RDP to get the accelerated video. But I can't say that I've ever actually tried that. I mean, most of the time, RemoteFX is designed for clients. And
you need to have RDP 7.1.
Yeah, so... And VM Connect is actually using RDP behind the scenes. I just don't know if it supports the accelerated video. No? So, yeah, you had to use RDP. Any other questions? There's one over here. What was the question? Can you type in a computer name? Yeah, certainly. The normal light touch wizard will... It has a prompt in there. The same screen that had the domain join details, the computer name's at the top of that screen. You can turn that on or off, so you could either automatically generate your computer names or let you type one in. The same would also apply for UDI in the Config Manager world. The wizard there would allow you to type in a computer name and validate that it's up to 15 characters long, that it meets these naming patterns and that kind of thing. So, yeah, you can do that. Okay. I suspect we've gone over enough time here. So if there are any other questions, I'll hang around up front. Otherwise, thanks. Fill out your evals.